This is the July 25 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Joe Jansen, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, along with Kirk Kimmel from AgMarket.net and Greg Johnson from TGM. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at willag.org. We'll start with a conversation I had with Joe Jansen about the article he wrote for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can also find it on our website. The title is "The Corn Market Works to Explain Itself." In it, Joe, you work through ending stocks and the stocks-to-use ratios. To begin with, can you define both those sets of terms for me, please?
Absolutely, yeah. The ending stocks to use and the stocks to use ratio are really just kind of ways that we try and summarize everything we know about the state of supply and demand in a particular commodity market. So for corn right now, we want to get a sense of like, is available supply tight? Does the market need higher prices to kind of ration that supply out? And the way that we, the best indicator that we have, if we try and put one number on it, is that ending stocks to use ratio. And there's been kind of a little bit of confusion because that ending stocks to use ratio for the 24-25 marketing year, the one that we're just about to the end of now, has decreased substantially since the start of the 24 crop. So we used to think that the 24 crop was really going to fill up the balance sheet, really, you know, abundant supplies. We needed really low prices. That has sort of changed because last year's crop wasn't quite as big as we thought. And because, you know, corn usage has been especially strong this year, particularly in the export market. But we're still kind of stuck with a corn price now and a new crop corn price on the board about, you know, in the range of 410 to 430 a bushel.
Why is it that you suppose that the market never has gotten to a place during the current crop marketing year that it need to push prices into that $5 range, given what the current ending stocks are?
Yeah, I think this part of it has to do with, you know, we thought there was, you know, abundant supply. And so if you think there's, you know, plenty of corn around, you don't go out paying a particularly high price. And then the other part is we've always kind of expected that even if we didn't have a lot of corn right at this very minute, we would have more in the future. And that's certainly our expectation for this coming 2025 crop in the United States and really for the corn crop that they harvested in Brazil in the last few months. So both of those things have kind of said, hey, you know, in the world, at least there is, you know, there's going to be enough corn. We don't really need high prices to ration currently available supply.
So the current ending stocks to use ratio is 8.7. Anything below 10% is considered to start to get to that point where it might need to be rationed. 8.7, I think, by your numbers, it actually should. But the marketplace is looking forward to what in the coming marketing year that causes this not to be the case.
I think that's right. And I think the other part is sort of we're kind of at a unique time in the corn calendar where the ending stock in USDA data most of the time is like a really good and reliable indicator. But there's sometimes where some things aren't totally built into the numbers that USDA is putting out. And I think the big one right now is obviously the corn yield figure for the United States. USDA has produced a trend line yield estimate. That's 181 bushels per acre as a national average yield. I think almost everyone in the marketplace would expect that as of right now, based on what we know about the 2025 U.S. corn crop, that number is going to have to go up. But USDA typically doesn't adjust that number until its August crop report. And so we're kind of in a situation where the market maybe knows a little bit more than those USDA numbers and is building in the expectation of a bigger corn crop.
On that note, it would be why the price of futures may not move as much as the old crop cash basis, which would be searching out for corn depending on where you are.
That's absolutely right. We're in a situation where when we get down to the end of the marketing year, things can get kind of highly variable because just because of, you know, there's this very temporary short-term imbalance between maybe supply and demand in particular locations and at specific moments in time.
Is there a relationship between corn ending stocks and price over time? Season's average cash price.
Yeah, whatever indicator of price you use, we think there is a reasonably strong correlation between ending stocks to use, that is that summary measure of available supply, and prices. And you are not going to get a high stocks to use ratio and high prices. And you are not going to get a very low stocks to use ratio and very low prices. But we can get, we're kind of in this in-between point where we're kind of, prices that are, a price with a four on it. If we look at sort of the last 20 years of corn pricing, a season average cash price of above $4 is reasonably high. I mean, it's not sort of, we've certainly seen years where that average price was in the threes, but we're kind of at, relatively tight stocks for a $4 corn price. And I think, again, this is all a story of expectations. And we expect that there will be corn coming to market by the time we get to harvest. And that's going to change the supply and demand picture substantially.
This time frame is not the only outlying year with this kind of indication where you have a shorter crop coming into what is expected to be a very large crop.
Yeah, I think if you go back to 2013, 2014, or coming out of the 2012 drought, that was a period where, corn supplies weren't, sort of totally abundant yet. The balance sheet hadn't been totally filled up, and that stocks use ratio wasn't necessarily particularly high. But everyone expected that bigger crops would be coming in the future. Available supply would sort of get built back up. We're in a stocks building period, and that is what happened back then.
What happens if you plug in the biggest numbers that you can capture from the commercial side? That I think is a StoneX figure, well over about 187.
That's right. Yeah.
Average yield around the nation.
Yeah, they came out with this number. I guess this is now about 10 days ago of 187. National average yield. You put that into the balance sheet, that really sort of fills things back up very quickly. So you put that into the balance sheet, you get to a 14% stocks to use ratio, and all of a sudden, a $4 corn price looks reasonably good when we have that level of available supply. In part, that's in part because the big yields are filling things up. In part because we have a lot of corn acres planted, or we think we have a lot of corn acres planted. My anecdotal tour of the U.S. Midwest this summer suggests that that's the case, and those corn crops look pretty good. So you do that and you fill the balance sheet up pretty quick.
You are in Nebraska today. Where have you traveled in the last week?
Last few weeks, we've been up to Canada and back down to Nebraska. So we've kind of seen the outer northern edge of the Corn Belt: Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and this is not the pro farmer crop tour. It's like the me and my kids crop tour. But that crop tour didn't find a lot of bad cornfields. I certainly believe that, a national average yield number above 181 is totally reasonable at this point in time, given what we know about the size of the crop.
Given that you believe that the trade has built this into the marketplace, what does that mean for the USDA crop production report in the month of August, the first one?
It will be very interesting to see. I mean, I think if they come out with a yield number in the, 183, 184, 185, I think the market will shrug at a number like that. I mean, if it was a number that's bigger than that, that could, that could be pretty bearish for the corn market. But I think the market is pricing in something in that range already.
For those who have followed you and understood from other articles you've written and posted to the Farm Doc Daily website that the April, May, June, July timeframe are usually the best marketing timeframes for both corn and soybeans in any given year prior to the harvest of the crop, and they're well behind, maybe have not marketed anything at this point, is there any advice as it's related to what can be done going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to think seriously about spreading pricing, that timing risk across time. And so there are years where this is not the case, but historically, it pays to have some portion of that crop marketed prior to harvest. Now, that's not the only strategy, and one could think about, you know, pricing strategies for post-harvest grain marketing. But that's, you know, potentially entails a risk and a cost of holding that grain. That's the nice thing about pre-harvest marketing is you kind of eliminate some of those storage costs, and you spread that timing risk out over time. So, you know, we encourage farmers to think about, you know, what is going to get you to sell. If we see some rallies based on weather news in the next few weeks, and that's, you know, certainly something that happens at this time of year is the market's watching the weather very closely. Take advantage of those kinds of pricing opportunities to again, not necessarily hit that home run, but to spread price risk out across time.
Lower your expectations and have a quick trigger finger?
I hesitate to say have a quick trigger finger. I mean, I think have a plan that commits you to action. A specific plan that has realistic goals.
Joe Jansen is with the University of Illinois, an agricultural economist, a member of the Farm Doc team. We closed out our conversation by talking about cash basis and the need for it to do, quote, the heavy lifting into the end of this year. When I spoke with both Greg Johnson and Kurt Kimmel, we took up this topic. I asked Greg from the Andersons if we'd arrived at the time of the year where cash basis really had to react in order to finish bringing old crop out of the farmers' hands, despite futures being lower.
Yes, we have. It's extremely localized. We've seen some markets drop their basis, anticipating having enough going into fall harvest. We've seen other markets really pushing the bid for corn. So, for example, here in central Illinois, corn basis is getting better, but some rail lines, CSX, for example, the NS market, those markets have weakened a little bit, but the CN market, the export market, is very strong. So that's to be expected with a 1.3 carryout. That's extremely tight. But it's not tight everywhere. It's tight in some areas, some zones, and it's not so tight in other zones. So yes, we have seen basis improve in our area, but that's not everywhere.
How do you see basis and futures working in tandem to price cash corn over the next couple of months?
Yeah, I think corn, there's a chance for a quick shipment bid in first if you have corn ready for first half September. So you may not want to lock the basis in on that part of your production if that has to come to town. But if you have corn that has to come to town and it won't be ready till later in September or October, it sure feels like we're going to fill up and there'll be piles of corn on the ground. And so basis levels probably will get weaker as we get into the gut slot of harvest. As far as soybeans are concerned, we certainly hope China will show up and buy U.S. beans at some point in time, because the last time that they did not buy beans in the fall, we saw basis levels get extremely weak. So I think as a defensive measure, it wouldn't hurt for producers to lock in bean basis now, and for corn basis to get that locked in for what's going to come in later in the harvest. But for what comes in early in the harvest, maybe hold off on that and see if we can get some quick shipment premiums.
Kurt Kimmel, following up on this note, how are you advising producers, and what is JSA saying about this marketplace?
Yeah, they say take advantage of it, because basically it's kind of a gift in through here. Several things to look at. One is Texas is harvesting, the Delta starting to harvest, so we're going to start to see some harvest activity in the South to pick up here to kind of ease that. So yeah, we're all in on capturing that. They kind of feel basis risk is quite large here as we go through the fall, just the fact that producers just aren't sold up. So this is an excellent opportunity to clean up some old crop if you still have some to move, and depending on where you are on new crop.
Remember that Southern Illinois, Southern Indiana, Southern Ohio, which typically supplies that feeder market in the southeastern United States, was extremely wet in the spring and extremely delayed. So that's where we think the shortage may come in, or short delay. And so that's where we may be able to take advantage of a quick shipment premium. But Kurt's right. There's other areas, Texas and the far south, that will be harvesting soon if they haven't started already. But that feeder market in the Carolinas and Georgia that's typically supplied by southern Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, all those areas were extremely wet this spring. And so it may be a little late before they can get corn down into the southeast.
This will provide producers in the southern third of the state of Illinois, parts of Indiana, Missouri, some opportunities. But if you live further to the north, what are you thinking?
Yeah, the basis is probably going to be stronger in the south and the east, and it'll work its way north. So the guys in northern Illinois, Iowa, they may not be able to take advantage of it near as much. It might have a little bit of a supportive effect. You know, they might get a 5 or a 10 cent bump in the basis, but the farther south you are, I think the better your chances are of getting better basis levels.
Friday afternoon, USDA will release a couple of important cattle reports. To this point, the herd size has continued to drop. What are your expectations? And will demand remain strong for feed usage of corn by the beef cattle industry?
Well, feed demand's debatable. Feed demand's actually a miscellaneous category. You got to talk true feed demand. And yes, with lower cattle numbers, that's an issue, but they are feeding to heavier weights. So I think the feed demand in general is going to remain fairly strong. The thing is, on feed demand, heifer retention is just not there. Why feed out of something when you can get a ton of money for it, and why risk something dying on you? So the heifer retention is just not there. This cattle and feed report here on Friday is actually going to probably come in 98% at the top end, 96 on the marketing. So we'll see how that unfolds. As far as feed demand goes, the main item this week on feed demand is China's hog herd. Pork supplies relatively high. They want to probably take steps to curb some sows, bring down some production to prop up prices so there's profitability for their producer. So what does that do with soybeans coming in to being crushed? Future demand and feed demand in China is a question.
Let's stay with the beef cattle for just a moment. If they're being fed to heavier weights, it will take more corn for each pound that is put on than the previous pound. I would think that would be good for demand going forward.
I do personally. You hear analysts say cattle are too high priced and we're due for a break, and we probably are due for a break. But as long as consumers are willing to pay, you know, $6 a pound for hamburger and $15 a pound for steak, the demand is still going to be there. The cattle on feed number is probably going to be low, like Kurt said, 98%, 99%. So we're already at 72 year lows, and that doesn't look like we're going to rebound anytime soon as far as the numbers are concerned. But as Kurt said, we're feeding them to heavier weights, so there's still more feed. That's a little bit more feed, but overall, as far as from a corn point of view, we're not increasing the demand for corn. We're just trying to keep it steady and not losing. You would think we'd be losing feed demand based on the lower number of cattle, but I think we're kind of keeping it steady. But that's the good news. The bad news is we're not increasing feed demand.
What are producers telling you and TGM about the size of the crop in our part of the world and through the southern part of the state of Illinois? And maybe, Kirk, you can jump in with other places as well.
From basically Interstate 70 north, the crop is in great shape. We haven't had a lot of rain in certain areas, but we've had just enough rain to get by. So even though there may be some lawns that look a little yellowish brownish, the corn itself is still that deep dark green color. So I would say the potential is still there in the northern two-thirds of the state of Illinois, on into Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin. Now, southern third of Illinois, you get south of Interstate 70, it's a different story. They were planted late. They've had plenty of rain you can't get over the fact that they planted it a month late. And so you cannot expect normal yields out of the southern third of Illinois, I don't believe. But we can have certainly above average yields in the northern two-thirds of the state.
Well, it's a couple of weeks ago. We had about 4 inches in town and a quarter inch to the east of town. So, yeah, hit and miss. But overall, there's been some general coverage of rain. Producers are quite comfortable with the crop prospects, and analysts are up in the yield as a nation. I mean, how you average that all out, we're not going to know until next year. Now, with the rain, the biggest thing producers are going through. When do I spray? How do I get the longevity of the spray? There's different funguses showing up. So that's kind of the main emphasis in here, to keep an eye on things so we don't lose 30, 40, 50 bushels to acre on some surprise.
On that note, if you're watching for diseases like tar spot or southern rust, which has made its way northward into both Illinois and Indiana, Iowa as well, you can find out more about the diseases, where they are, and what the expectations for the disease to develop in your field might be at the CropProtectionNetwork.org website. That's all one word, CropProtectionNetwork.org. This is operated by the plant pathologist across the land-grant university system, along with the weed scientist as well. Check it out today. Under resources, you can find a map with the counties and where the diseases are. Under the tools, you'll be able to find a crop disease development tool. It's all at CropProtectionNetwork.org. Now, let's talk about diseases and the impact that they might have, Greg, on the quality of a crop coming to the elevator. How much of a concern might this be for you?
Yeah, if it's a extremely hot and dry year, the seeds tend to crack, and then you get moisture in there, and that's where you get the disease pressure. So far we haven't had that this year. We've had ample rain. If we get too much rain, we may see leaf diseases, as Kurt was talking about, but that usually doesn't impact the quality of the kernel as much as what a hot and dry summer would. So at this point, I think we're going to be in very good shape quality-wise.
Kurt Kimmel, now let's turn your attention to international politics, the trade deals that President Trump is trying to negotiate with countries across the planet. There have been some announced, others not yet. What is it that the trade is paying attention to? It really, at this point, doesn't appear to have reacted very much to any of the announced agreements.
Well, that's a tough one. Everybody likes to talk yield and production now. Nobody wants to touch demand, just the uncertainty on how this tariff issue is going to unfold. But Greg, I think you hit the nail on the head here. China, this bean demand going into this fall, that is just huge. And that's the main concern. What we're seeing, though, is August 1, China's going to be extended till November 12th. So I think it's going to be keep putting back little by little here over time. But we got to see some new crop purchases come on the books, because we're in a time window frame here where logistic-wise, you got to get those ships lined up.
There have been five trade deals announced. You know, 19% tariffs with Philippines, 19% with Indonesia, 15% Japan, 10% UK, 20% Vietnam. But there's the two biggest ones are the EU and China, and those are going to take time. Those are going to take weeks. The EU will probably be announced in August. I hope the Chinese trade agreement is announced in August, but I could see that, you know, bleeding on out into September and October. And like I said, if we don't have an agreement done by the time the soybeans start rolling in, that's really going to affect soybean basis. So, those two countries, the EU and the Chinese trade agreement, are huge.
Those trade agreements, of course, with China and the European Union are big and important. Japan, too, is important, primarily because they are the number two importer of U.S. corn.
They are, and the devil's in the details. I mean, there's some talk that, you know, China wants, you know, we want them to buy rice and corn. China obviously produces a lot of rice. They're trying to protect their farmers. So, you know, there's, you know, we want to see the details. Do they really have to buy rice? They've agreed to buy X number of billions of dollars of U.S. agricultural products. But does that include corn and rice, or are those other products? So we'll have to, you know, kind of sift through the details and see if how friendly, in fact, this deal is for the United States.
And we're still waiting on trade agreements with Canada and Mexico. There is a USMCA, or the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, that's in place. The Trump administration admittedly says it wants to renegotiate it next year, but the tariffs that are there in place today really need to be negotiated away in some form. What do we know as it's related to those tariffs?
Yeah, they're our most logistically best trade partners there is. And we really benefited of this last year, if Mexico and corn particularly in their drought situation. Now they're receiving some relief from that. But two, there's, I don't know if it's true or not, there's social media saying that Mexico and Brazil are starting to push the pencil on what they can do to get around some of these tariffs with the U.S.
On that note, logistically, Brazil to Mexico is by ship, and from the United States to Mexico is mostly simply a train across the border.
And one thing to keep in mind, the tariffs that President Trump has threatened to put on Mexico and Canada, those apply to a lot of products, but not to corn and soybeans. Anything that was covered under the USMCA agreement does not get affected by any new tariffs. So corn and soybeans, for example, is not affected. So I suppose we could alienate these other countries enough that, you know, they might try to, but, you know, the bottom line is corn and soybean exports to Mexico, for example, should not be affected.
Secretary Howard Lutnick last weekend on the Sunday shows reminded the American population that 75% of the trade between the United States, Mexico, and Canada is covered by the USMCA. Again, expectations is that that agreement will be renegotiated next year, but really that only trade of about 25% is being argued and tariffed and negotiated at this time among all three countries. Let's get a final word from each of you now. We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net.
Well, if we got the cattle herd at 1960 levels, shouldn't the methane in the atmosphere be at 1960 levels? Just asking. But anyway, I'm kind of excited about the August crop report to kind of see what that says. But more importantly, I always enjoy Chip marching across the fields here August 18th to the 22nd like that to actually get a visual survey from their crop participants.
As usual, we will cover the Midwest Crop Tour in detail throughout the week. You can listen for that on the daily updates during the closing market report at 2:06 or on the podcast. Search it out at Closing Market Report each and every day of that week. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com. What's your final word for the day?
Well, the good to excellent ratings that come out every week from USDA, some analysts have extrapolated that, that it's so good that we could have 186 bushel national yield. Now, I don't know that anybody really thinks that, but 183 is probably what's being traded right now. Last month, the USDA was 181. So my point is, we probably aren't going to see this yield drop below 181 anytime soon. So we probably need to get it below 181 in order to get some excitement in the corn market. Otherwise, we may drift lower into fall. And then for farmers that have storage, you know, higher input costs, we'll need higher prices of corn next year to encourage corn planting. But for people that don't have storage, take advantage of any 10, 15 cent rallies in corn, because if you don't, you're going to have to hold on to it an awful long time, and the storage charges will probably eat up any gains that you see post-harvest.
You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Greg Johnson from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com. That's the elevator and the system that belongs to FS Growmark, covering a good third of the state of Illinois, including the elevator here in Champaign County. We were also joined by Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net. He is in Normal, Illinois, and our show began with a conversation I held with Joe Jansen, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. You may find more from him on the article we discussed on our website at willag.org. What is the corn market trying to explain now? Look for that article. Oh, there will be one other article there as well that is important. It's entitled Empowering Illinois Soybean Producers. There is a webinar next week. If you sign up for it today and you're one of the first 25 registrants, you will have an opportunity for a $350 honorarium. can see that on our website. Again, look for Empowering Illinois Soybean Producers. This is sponsored by the United Soybean Board. All the details online at WILLAG.org. You've been listening to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.